So the director of the Office for Science and Technology Policy, the person responsible for advising the president on advanced science and technology, just said that limitless energy is real and bureaucracy is what's keeping it from the people. Releasing exotic technology to the public becomes possible only when it serves a national strategic objective. China is that objective. There have been some pretty incredible statements being made recently. I don't know if any of you have caught wind of this. I thought I'd give you all an update because this could be one of the biggest hints and nudges towards what might be coming down the pipeline in America in relation to disclosures of paradigm-shifting technologies, breakthrough physics, energy, propulsion. Very interesting statements that have gone through the official White House website. On April the 14th, 2025, hidden within the official language of policy and patriotism, a senior U.S. official quietly acknowledged the reality of technologies that many of us in the alternative research communities that deal with propulsion and energy sciences that appear to have been suppressed in the modern era have strongly suspected the existence of for decades, and yet official acknowledgement of such developments as free energy or anti-gravity, teleportation, and other such innovations that many would consider to be nothing more than science fiction have not been given weight by official bodies in government. But recent events have seen a change in the attitude and perhaps a surfacing of held back knowledge through the chosen orators of the current administration in the United States, now taking the form of a White House official named Michael Kratsios. He's the 13th director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and he recently delivered a speech titled The Golden Age of American Innovation, delivered at the Endless Frontiers Retreat in Austin, Texas, during which Michael hinted pretty significantly towards an emerging free energy paradigm and that these technologies already exist, but are being blocked from emerging into global applications due to a bureaucratic regulatory regime that is still stifling our development today. Michael's address is, on the surface, a call to reinvigorate American science and technology, but clear reference is made towards access to revolutionary energy systems, transportation that defies classical limitations, and the manipulation of space and time itself, quoted directly from him. Now, if we're also looking at this through the lens of recent developments over the years regarding UFOs and a stronger public presence for transparency, the emergence of more insider testimony and claims of suppressed technology all point towards a very specific conclusion that, again, many of us have already come to based on the historical evidence and the available data in our modern era, that the US government and likely others, although not strictly the mainline surface level of government and more so the darker, murkier elements of classified projects that are not always, if ever, beholden to a serious audit or regulatory oversight commitments, that these shadier elements likely already possess beyond next generation technologies that exhibit behavioral characteristics and capabilities that most of us would attribute, if we witnessed them without context, to an alien visitation of some form, when in reality it could very well be an unacknowledged platform being developed by humans, deployed by humans, and with a very human agenda. And yet these statements by Michael Kratsios throughout his speech suggest that we may be nearing the public rollout of exotic propulsion and free energy systems, and they're beginning to lay the ideological and bureaucratic groundwork for that shift right now. Kratsios begins by invoking a familiar American narrative, one of manifest destiny, the pioneer spirit, national rebirth. He characterizes the current moment as the early light of a new golden age, directly referencing the optimism of the mid-20th century. Back then, Americans looked at the future with a kind of techno-utopian faith. Nuclear power promised electricity that was too cheap to meter. The moon was no longer out of reach, and hypersonic planes like the X-15 set records that have yet to be broken. But in the next breath, Michael laments our modern stagnation. Commercial nuclear development has slowed to a crawl. Our aircrafts are slower than they were decades ago. And even our railways lag far behind the world's leading nations. Now, this contrast isn't just rhetorical. It's a clever framing device. Kratsios is contrasting what we were told the future would be with the bureaucratic and economic entropy that stole that future from us. And then he points to a solution, a resurrection of that vision, but now armed with tools and technology that are already in hand, just not yet in the public hands. One of the speech's most curious and mind-blowing moments was when Kratsios states, and I'm quoting, "Our technologies permit us to manipulate time and space. They leave distance annihilated." Now, these are not casual words. In the lexicon of aerospace engineering, annihilating distance implies, quite frankly, field-based propulsion systems that do not rely on combustion or Newtonian mechanics, systems that theoretically bend space-time, compress distance, or create inertial voids through advanced energy manipulation. Now, these are the same technologies that have long rumored to be buried within black budget special access and unacknowledged or waived and carved out special access programs in the labyrinth of the Department of Defense and the Pentagon. Technologies associated potentially with reverse engineered UFOs, non-human technology, alien vehicles, vacuum energy extraction, and zero-point field dynamics. So Kratsios goes further, referencing, quotations, limitless energy, and claiming that the main thing holding this back is not the tech, but the regulatory regime that's been in place since the 1970s. That's very interesting. Let's stop here for a moment and just consider this. So the director of the Office for Science and Technology Policy, the person responsible for advising the president on advanced science and technology, just said that limitless energy is real and bureaucracy is what's keeping it from the people. Now, that statement alone demands scrutiny. Because if what he says is true, then we've been living, as many have claimed, in a world artificially constrained by outdated systems, while the real breakthroughs, those that could eliminate energy poverty, climate disruption, and perhaps even geopolitical conflict, those have been hidden behind layers of classification and red tape. Now, this is something that we see echoed across all sorts of critical industries and domains that have the potential to create controversy, to create disruption. We're seeing this happening with our models in history. We're seeing this happen with our models for consciousness, our models in physics. And we're now being given some very provocative statements from an extremely high-ranking individual who is in the perfect position to know whether or not such statements would be true, saying the quiet part out loud regarding free energy, limitless energy, its existence, and its true reason for a lack of surfacing in the public domain, which is all to do with the bureaucracy of the entrenched deep state of which America represents only an element. But what we're truly dealing with here is an octopus with a lot of tentacles in many regions of global influence, especially across the West. And I would remind people that not too long ago, venture capitalist Mark Andreessen admitted to being in meetings with Biden administration White House officials who informed him that they had classified entire branches of physics during the Cold War and could do this again and would do this again in relation to their discussion at the time, which was on AI development, the regulation of that development, and Mark Andreessen's comments regarding the core math involved and how they couldn't just prevent people from accessing the math, at which point one of the officials butts in and says, "Oh, we can. We did it in the Cold War, and we can do it again." So this is what we're dealing with. And this seems to be what Michael Kratsios is referencing in relation to a regulatory regime that is stonewalling incredible innovations in order to, what? Maintain the status quo. In order to maintain the balance between essentially the dinosaur industries of oil and gas with a vested macroeconomic interest and the emerging paradigms that are pushing into the forefront, all being controlled by a shadow state that oversees development in these critical arenas. When Kratsios speaks of technologies that, I quote, bend time and space, he's using language that directly parallels, as many of you know, decades of theoretical physics and suppressed research into warp drive mechanics, gravitational wave propulsion, the manipulation of inertial frames. These are not the idle dreams of fringe pseudoscientists. They're concepts explored by defense contractors, NASA's Breakthrough Propulsion Physics Program, and even the infamous Pais effect, patents filed through the U.S. Navy by my dear friend and frequent guest on the podcast, Dr. Salvatore Pais. So Michael Kratsios is obviously not just talking about faster planes or better batteries. He's talking about fundamental paradigm shifts in how we interact with the fabric of the universe, the same kind of shift that occurred when Newtonian mechanics gave way to quantum physics. If these technologies are being alluded to in a public-facing government speech, we have to ask the question, are they finally preparing the population? Not for the development, but for the release of technologies that have already been refined in the shadows. And let's not forget the timing as well. This speech comes off of the back of several years of high-level conversation, congressional hearings, Senate intelligence briefings, where officials publicly and in closed session environments have purported to have knowledge on the recovery of materials not of this world, materials from non-human intelligences. Technologies, biological samples, even claims from certain elements in the DoD, such as Dr. Eric W. Davis, of intact non-human craft. And so the overlap here between field propulsion, recovered vehicles, energy systems that defy our known physics, it's now all too aligned to be ignored. And Kratsios isn't shy about his framing. America, he says, has to outpace China in the race for technological dominance. He invokes the concept of technological supremacy as both an imperative and a justification. Now, this rhetoric really is key. Because in the halls of government, especially when it comes to the arena of special access programs and defense projects, releasing exotic technology to the public becomes possible only when it serves a national strategic objective. China is that objective. China is the narrative vessel through which the disclosure of these capabilities can be normalized. The public doesn't need to hear about aliens or metaphysics or consciousness. They just need to believe that America is back on top, that advanced transportation, energy independence, and impossible-sounding breakthroughs are all part of a patriotic revival. In that context, disclosure is no longer a risk. It's actually a selling point. It's really quite genius because one of the big issues I and many others who have discussed this when it comes to the government's own position on disclosing these developments is the culpability, the illegality of some of these black programs within this nexus and the public outrage that is soon to follow if explosive revelations about trillion-dollar black projects holding back free energy paradigms were to come into the light, absent the appropriate contextual framework for the government to benefit from this revelation rather than suffer damage. So China now represents this perfect window of opportunity to disclose what needs to be disclosed whilst saving face with your own citizens for not telling people sooner that this was a technological innovation that we had the capability to use. It's a new administration. It's a new tactic, and the public responds with a new mindset if they can be given the appropriate context. And it seems that Michael Kratsios is attempting to provide what he believes to be the appropriate context. And I would argue that given his high-level position in the White House as the director of the Office of Science and Technology, I can't imagine for one moment that he would give these statements that he did in a public environment if he was not green-lit to do so by the president. And that's another part of this that we should address, Trump and his family. When Nikola Tesla died in 1943, the US government moved very swiftly to seize all of his papers and personal effects. These included notebooks and unpublished materials, correspondence, and according to various reports, dealt with advanced energy systems, directed energy, and even concepts related to space and time manipulation. But who was the scientist that was brought in to review Tesla's confiscated work for the US government? Dr. John G. Trump, an electrical engineer, a physicist, an MIT professor, and also the uncle of Donald J. Trump. Now, the mainstream narrative claims that John G. Trump found nothing of practical value in Tesla's seized materials, but this dismissal is not one that's given by the man himself. I came across some rare archive video footage of Dr. John G. Trump discussing his involvement in the evaluating of Tesla's work. Now, he mentions correspondence between Tesla and members of both the British and Russian royal families in regards to acquiring a superweapon of incredible capabilities.
Should this be evidence of a secret weapon, which I was reminded by the agents, the two agents who were present during the entire time, was a matter of concern to the United States. In the course of this, I did come across a number of letters directed at the upper echelon of the British Empire, that is, I think, to the King and Queen, or perhaps just to the King of England, and also to the Tsar of Russia, explaining that he was the inventor of a secret weapon which had rather remarkable properties, and that he would be interested in entering into a negotiation which would lead to a disclosure of what they were. Of course, I spent a good deal of time looking through these papers, trying to find out what the nature of this secret weapon was. I think I had, although I don't remember it so very accurately, an idea of what its properties were. It had the capability of acting at a great distance, of being destructive to flying objects and things of that kind at a place which was remote from the source.
It seems to me that John Trump knew more than mainstream debunkers give credit for, especially considering Dr. Trump's deep involvement in classified radar, particle beam, and high voltage technologies for the US military during and also after World War II. He was perfectly positioned to be the guy that they would call to assess all of Tesla's work. So is it possible that some of Tesla's more speculative research, particularly into wireless energy power transmission, field resonance, scalar wave technologies, was quietly absorbed into black research programs? Well, from the fleeting glimpses of advanced research and development from back in the Cold War era and into the 1970s that we've gained access from Freedom of Information Act requests, FOIA requests, declassified documents, etc., we see a clear interest in the weaponization of scalar waves and research avenues that all echo the interests of Nikola Tesla himself. More than a coincidence, in my opinion. And if so, could Donald Trump, now as president, be not just aware of these legacies in his own family, but actively shaping policy that greenlights their reemergence? I mean, the rhetoric emerging from the Trump administration's Science and Technology Office, language that directly parallels Tesla's lifelong vision of limitless energy and distance annihilation and the transformation of space and time, it feels like a revival of his dreams for the future. And it was Tesla himself who said that the present is theirs, the future, for what I really worked for, is mine. Even Trump's frequent, almost cryptic references to a big reveal or the calm before the storm or energy we haven't even dreamed of begin to take a new weight if we view it in this context. He even recently made reference to weapons that nobody can even imagine. Is this more of Trump's classic hype, or are we seeing the groundwork being laid for some major revelations? He even wants to bring back the world fairs, which were renowned for showcasing the inventions of the time. The trailblazers like Tesla, for example, showcased their inventions at these fairs. I mean, doesn't it all feel very deliberate? Could the decision to release these ideas slowly and symbolically be personally motivated for him? Something to consider. Regardless of one's political stance, it's clear that Trump's legacy may ultimately be shaped not by traditional politics, but by how his administration positions the US in relation to the next great technological leap, one that was perhaps dreamed by Tesla, buried by bureaucracy, and is now potentially beginning to see the light of day. But here's where I want to introduce a deeper concern. This wouldn't show up in policy documents, but it's just as crucial. If these technologies are real and we're preparing to wield them publicly, what is the energetic frequency that we're bringing to that exchange? Are we carrying a consciousness of peace and cooperation and reverence for life, or are we dragging warfare and fear and domination? You know, I've long held the belief, and so do many experiences of UFO phenomenon, that the interface between consciousness and advanced phenomena is subtle, reactive, and state-dependent. If we militarize this transition, if the golden age becomes another stage for competition, we may end up engaging the cosmos with the same wounds that we've inflicted upon Earth. And that's where Kratsios's framing gives me pause. His rhetoric, while hopeful, is deeply tied to conquest. Victory, supremacy, security, protection, these aren't the words of communion, they're the words of command. And if we are about to wield technologies capable of bending space-time, as he says, of traversing realms and tapping the vacuum, perhaps we need to pause and ask, are we spiritually and ethically ready? If not, then we must hope that if this is truly the time of disclosing these capabilities, that somehow in the wielding of them, despite our collective immaturity, it may assist us in hastening our path towards becoming a wiser species. If not, then we will likely face annihilation ourselves by our very own hands. The Kratsios speech may go down as one of the first mainstream government-adjacent documents to openly signal the existence or impending arrival of technologies that challenge our most basic assumptions about energy, motion, and the limits of possibility. Whether through policy change, defense strategy, or economic necessity, we're being nudged towards a disclosure, not just of what's out there, but of what's already here. But what do we do with that knowledge? How we frame it, how we share it, and most importantly, how we use it, will determine whether we enter a true golden age or if we are consumed by our own designs.